day, Adrian jumps at the chance to take the trip of a lifetime with his girlfriend's dad.
Woke up at 6 a.m. in the morning. Got out of bed carefully because the dog was spread-eagled across my bed, flat on its back with its legs in the air. At first I thought it was dead, but I checked its pulse and found signs of life, so I just slid out from underneath its warm fur. The dog's dead old now and needs its sleep. After measuring my chest and shoulders, I had a thorough wash in cold water. I read somewhere that cold water makes a man of you. I've been a bit worried about my maleness lately. Somewhere along the line, I seem to have picked up too many female hormones. This is just my luck. I went to see the doctor about it, but as usual, he was most unsympathetic. I asked if I could have some of my female hormones taken out. Dr. Gray laughed a horrible, bitter laugh and gave his usual advice, which was to go out and have my head kicked about in a rugby scrum. As I was leaving his surgery, he said, "And I don't want to see you back here for at least 2 months." I asked, "Even if I'm taken seriously ill?" He muttered, "Especially if you're taken seriously ill. I'm considering reporting him to his superiors. All this worry has affected my poetry output. I used to be able to turn out at least 4 poems an hour, but now I'm down to 3 a week. If I'm not careful, I'll dry up altogether." When I got home, I hurried round to Pandora's house. As usual, the Braithwaites were having a row. Mr. Braithwaite was shouting, "Pandora, make your bloody mind up. Are you going to Russia or are you not?" Pandora said, "Not. I can't leave the cat." I could hardly believe my ears. Pandora was turning down a week in Russia with her father just because her stinking old Moggy was about to give birth for the 4th time. During a pause in the argument, I said, "I would give my right leg to go to the country of Dostoevsky's birth." Pandora said, "Hop off then." However, Mr. Braithwaite didn't respond with an invitation for me to accompany him. How mean can you get? The Co-op Dairy had given him 2 tickets to go on a fact-finding tour of milk distribution in Moscow. Mrs. Braithwaite had refused to go because she'd recently joined the SDP, so a ticket was going spare. Yet the tight git was denying me the glorious opportunity of studying revolution in the raw. When Mr. Braithwaite had gone into the garden to savagely mow the lawn, Pandora said, "You shall go to Russia." She worked on her father for a whole week. She refused to eat. She played her stereo system at full decibels. She invited her Hell's Angels friends for tea every day. Her punk friends came to supper, and I had breakfast with the family most mornings. By the end of the week, Mr. Braithwaite was a broken man, and Mrs. Braithwaite was begging him to take me behind the Iron Curtain. Eventually, after Pandora held an open-air reggae concert on the back lawn, Mr. Braithwaite cracked. He came to our house at 11 o'clock one Sunday morning, so I got my parents out of bed and we had a meeting at our kitchen table. They enthusiastically agreed to me going to Russia for a week. My mother said, "Great, George, we could have a second honeymoon while Adrian's away." My father said, "Yeah, Mum will look after the baby. We can rediscover ourselves, eh, Pauline?" They slopped over each other for a bit and then turned their attention back to the proceedings, for, knowing that I was a virgin traveller, Mr. Braithwaite had brought a passport form with him, and I filled it in carefully under his supervision. I only made one mistake. Where it said sex, I put "not yet," instead of putting "male." We turned the house upside down looking for my birth certificate before my mother remembered that it was framed and hanging on Grandma's front room wall. My father was sent round to fetch it, while Mr. Braithwaite took me to have my passport photographs taken in a slot machine at the bus station. On the way, in the car, I practiced facial expressions. I wanted my photographs to show the real Adrian Mole. Warm and clever, yet enigmatic, and with just a hint of sensuousness. In the event, the photographs were disappointing. I looked like a spotty youth with just a hint of derangement in my sticking-out eyes. After everyone apart from me had had a good laugh at the photographs, my mother reluctantly wrote a cheque out for £15, and then the documents were checked and double-checked by Mr. Braithwaite before being put into a large envelope. While he did this, I examined him carefully, for he was to be my travelling companion and roommate for a week. Would I be able to stand the shame of being seen in the company of a man wearing flared trousers and a paisley-patterned waistcoat? Too late. The die was cast. Fate had thrown us together. If this was a film, then leaves would blow across the screen, and pages of diaries would riffle, trains would roar, and calendars would have months torn from them by unseen hands. But as this is just me speaking, then all I need tell you is that time went by. And I got my passport and my visa by second-class post. In the days before I left England for Russia, I also got advice. My grandma said, if the Russians offer to show you the salt mines, refuse and ask to be shown a shoe factory instead. My father advised me to bring the vodka with the blue label. My mother told me not to mention that, at the age of 14, she had been thrown out of the Young Communist League, Norwich branch, for fraternizing with American soldiers. Pandora advised against buying her a light amber necklace, saying she preferred the dark amber. And Mr. O'Leary, from over the road, advised me not to go at all. He said, "The Russians are godless heathens, Adrian." Mrs. O'Leary said, "Yes, and so are you, Declan. You haven't been to Mars for over 2 years." Apart from putting my seatbelt round my neck, the flight to Moscow was uneventful. The passengers concentrated on hiding or eating the garlic sausage and cream crackers they were served for lunch, but they warmed up a bit when the vodka came round, and by the time we landed at the airport just outside Moscow, some of them were disgustingly drunk and were not good examples of Western capitalist society. The airport was ill-lit and a bit chaotic, especially when it came to collecting luggage. Nearly everybody had brought Marks and Spencer's luggage, so quite a few arguments ensued, and suitcases had to be opened on the floor and underwear examined before the rightful owners managed to sort out the Y-fronts from the silk culottes. A big blonde woman stood in a gloomy corner of the arrival lounge, holding a placard saying, "In Tourist." 500 people milled around her asking questions. Mr. Braithwaite was bleating, "I'm here to study milk distribution. My name is Ivan Braithwaite. Am I in the right place?" The big blonde woman threw her placard down, clapped her hands and yelled, "All you foreigners are to be quiet. I am thinking I'm in Moscow Zoo. If I am lost forever, you must ask for Rosa. It is not my name, but it will do. My name is in Russian. It is too difficult for your clumsy tongues. Pick up your suitcases and follow me." The hotel we stopped in was monolithic and swarming with every nationality on earth. Having checked the room for hidden microphones, I got into bed in my underwear because my grandma had warned me that secret television cameras were behind every mirror, and I did not like the thought of my English parts being mocked by unseen foreign viewers. Mr. Braithwaite fell instantly asleep in the bed next to me, but I lay awake for hours, listening to the trams outside the hotel, and composing poems in my head. In the morning, Mr. Braithwaite was nowhere to be seen. My first thought was of abduction, but then I found a note on the toilet seat. It said, "Enjoy your day, see you late tonight." So, I was alone in Moscow. I put a towel over the bathroom mirror before attending to my toilette. Then, dressed in my best, I went down in the lift to breakfast. The dining room was like an aircraft hangar and was full of communists drinking coffee and eating caviar. Rosa stomped into the dining room and ordered her party to get on a coach. An American family, 3 milkmen, 2 German farmers and me were taken to see the sights. We had 10 minutes at the Kremlin, during which the American girl sold her camera, boots and umbrella to a disaffected whining youth who complained about his country until Rosa hit him round the head and said, "No other country would let you in anyway. You are a disgraceful pretty crook." I think she must have meant petty crook, because the youth was very unattractive. Then we got back into the coach and went to see the Bolshoi Theatre, the Olympic Stadium, and the residence of the British ambassador, and museums galore until it was time for lunch. The afternoon was free, so I went for a walk in Gorky Park and looked for bodies. Loads of Russians were there, walking about, just like English people do. Some were licking ice creams, some were talking and laughing, and some were sunbathing in their underwear with ruble notes on their noses to prevent sunburn. Indeed, such was the heat that I was forced to go back to the hotel and take off my balaclava, mother's fur hat, mittens, big overcoat, 4 sweaters, shirt, and 2 t-shirts. In the evening, we were coached off to the opera, where I and most of the Russians in the audience fell asleep, and the American girl sold her camera again. Mr. Braithwaite came back very late and very drunk. Vodka doesn't smell, but I knew. He got into bed without a word and snored very loudly. By now, I was convinced he was a spy. The pattern continued throughout our 3 days in Moscow. I would wake up, find a note from Mr. Braithwaite, and so would be forced to throw myself on the mercy of Intourist. By this time, I was boggle-eyed with culture and longed for a bit of English apathy and gross materialism. So, thinking dolls inside it, just like Tinker Tailor on TV. Pandora will get the biggest doll, and my father will get the smallest. As I entered the hotel lobby, I saw Mr. Braithwaite sitting on a sofa with a voluptuous Russian woman wearing a lime green trouser suit and platform shoes. She was toying erotically with the flares of Mr. Braithwaite's trousers, and I saw him catch her hand and lick the palm. God, it was a revolting sight. I felt like shouting, "Mr. Braithwaite, pull yourself together, you're an Englishman." When they saw me coming, they sprang apart. She was introduced as Lara, an expert on the diseases of cow's udders. I smiled coldly, then left them together, unable to witness the naked lust in their middle-aged eyes. 3 rubles were burning a hole in my sock, so I removed my shoe, took the money out, and summoned a taxi. "Take me to Dostoevsky's grave," I cried. The taxi driver said, "How much money do you have?" 3 rubles, I replied. "'Tain't enough," he said. "Dostoevsky's grave's in Leningrad." I complimented him on his English and slunk back into the hotel, did my packing and prepared to fly back. At Gatwick Airport, the customs officer looked at my passport. "A mole," he said. "Are you a mole?" "What?" I said. "A mole, a spy," he riposted. "Joke," he said. "Ha-ha, very funny," I replied. "You do not joke about such things in the Soviet Union. Me, a spy? I ask you." Mrs. Braithwaite and Pandora were waiting beyond the barrier. As we walked towards them, Mr. Braithwaite sighed in a deep Russian Chekhovian way and said, "Adrian, Mrs. Braithwaite may not understand about Lara." I said, "Mr. Braithwaite, I do not understand about Lara myself. How anyone could have an affair with a woman wearing a lime green trouser suit and platform shoes is beyond me." This speech took me through the barrier and into the arms of Pandora and England. Oh, Leicester, Leicester, Leicester.
Adrian Mole at Christmas was written by Sue Townsend, read by Nicholas Barnes, and produced by John Tideman.